Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. For just a couple hours each year, we have this ceremony. The basic theme of this festival is given to us in Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna tells, Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati tadaham bhaktyupahritam ashnami prayatatmana. It gives a wonderful insight into the perfection of bhakti yoga. The nature of the love that is shared between the devotee and the object of love. In bhakti, everything is calculated on the basis of love, not quantity. Not influence, but love. And that's the simplest, most real experience that we have in this world. When a little baby's born, the baby doesn't care what the bank account is of their mother and father. The baby doesn't care if they have gold medals or Academy Awards or Purple Hearts. The baby doesn't care if the parents are famous or unknown. The baby really doesn't care if you're living in a palace or a hut. All the baby really wants is your love. And that love is expressed by how you care. And if the baby's loved, the baby's happy. And if the baby's not loved, even if you give that baby diamond necklaces, a new one every day, and the best of foods, the baby's not happy. And I don't know if you remember, but we were all babies. And if we're not careful, we'll be babies again. But the reality is, that's the basic principle of our life. We're seeking to be loved. And we're seeking to love. It is said that things could give some flickering satisfaction to the senses and to the mind, but things could never touch the heart. To love and to be loved are the only experiences that could give fulfillment to the heart. Some of you have come to our Govardhan Eco Village, and we have many animal people there too. About 80 cows. But we didn't want to be in like a caste consciousness that we only protect cows. We want to give the best we possibly could.
Not that just the cows are not killed. Not just that the cows give nice milk. But unconditionally, to show our love for them by protecting them and bringing them happiness and peace in every possible aspect we can do. And it is said that cows are dependent on human compassion. And when there is loving care to the cow, it naturally awakens within humans the understanding of the sacredness of life itself. If we're just nice to cows, but we're not nice to humans, that's not a very high level of dharma. What to speak of other animals? So perhaps the most abused of all animals in India is the donkey. They usually have gigantic piles of bricks on the back of them, or huge sacks of dirt. Their hair's falling off, and they're being beaten, and they're carrying, and they're foaming at the mouth. They just want something to eat and something to drink. Because nobody cares about them. They just work them. So we got a couple donkeys that were just like that. And if you took one step toward them, they'd run away. Sorry about that. Because they were so afraid of people. They were just forced to do everything they did in their life and given no respect. And everybody likes to be respected. So after a couple months of just respecting them and treating them like children of God, which they are, Mamayavam so jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells, every living being is my child. Everyone is a part of me, a spiritual spark. And Krishna tells in Gita, he is, every living being is intimately dear to him. Madbhakta pujabhyadika. As we treat Krishna's children is how we respect Krishna also. So because the donkeys were being just treated with affection, even sometimes brushed by humans, they could feel, it's not just the brushing. You see, you have to express love for love to be communicated. You know, with God we can go like this, but even then, the idea of when we meditate, when we chant japa, when we have kirtan, when we connect with that love of God, it's expressed through seva, through service. And in marriages, I've seen things like this, where the husband or the wife is just like this, and their spouse says, you know, why don't you care about me? No, I love you. I'm meditating on my love for you. Doesn't work that way. Through our words, through our actions, it's expressed. Yat karoshi yad ashnashi yad jrohoshi yad asi yat yat tapasyasi konte yat tat kuru shramadarapanam. That's why we have the ability to speak words and perform actions. It's not just maya. Somehow or other, the Creator has given us the power to speak and to act. And those actions reach their fulfillment when they're expressions of something meaningful. Greed is never meaningful to the heart. what to speak of the soul. Arrogance, selfish lust, anger, envy. These things so much prevail in human consciousness in today's world, but they're not meaningful. What's meaningful is compassion, which is an expression of a love that we find within ourselves. And we all have that. And when we express it, it may be in how we smile at someone. It may be in offering someone nice food, prasad. It may be in helping and some encouraging words. That's what our actions and our words fructify in. Seva. And it's not just the thing that affects people. It's how it's done. If someone comes to your house as a guest and you say, "Oh God, why did you have to come now? You know, I'm busy. I have a lot of issues going on. You know, here's some water. Here's some rice. You know, eat it and, you know, get out as soon as you can." Okay, you gave them water and you gave them rice and you gave them a place to sit, but is the person going to be happy? But even if you're in that same predicament, whatever it is, however challenging, if you want to transcend it, a guest comes to your house, "Oh, how wonderful, an unexpected guest. I'm so happy you're here. You know, please bless all of our family." When an uninvited guest comes, the scriptures say that God is coming in that form. So please have rice and have water and enjoy it. And can I give you more? And the guest, unfortunately, may never want to leave. But it's affected that person's heart. Not what you give, but how you give. And the origin of that is our relationship with Krishna, with God. So we brushed the donkeys and we made them happy. We gave them nice food. And now, when they see us coming, they go, and they're really happy, and they sometimes run toward you. And I've seen some Brahmins become very surprised when the donkeys lick them. With affection, because they have their way of reciprocating also. So the idea is everyone and every species is seeking to love and be loved. But there's so many distractions in this world. Especially cell phones that are not turned off in class. So this beautiful verse from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells that if one offers me, Krishna saying, a single leaf, a flower, a piece of fruit, or even a little bit of water, if it's offered with devotion, I will accept it. Not only will he accept it, but he will consider it the most valuable thing in the creation, because it's offered with devotion. And anyone, anywhere, can offer a little water or a flower. Krishna is so kind, even a flower petal, or a fruit, or a leaf. This story has been told and retold throughout the ages, that God does not accept the thing that is offered, but accepts the purpose and the spirit in which it is given. And in our interactions with each other, that's very much the same. I'll speak briefly. At least that's my initial plan. In various incarnations of the Lord, how this truth has been again and again demonstrated. Lord Sri Ram, he appeared in Ayodhya. Vishwamitra, a great sage, took Ram and Lakshman, Ram's brother, to the forest. And later on they came to a magnificent kingdom, Mithila. That kingdom is still there today. It's not the same. It used to be the most royal, opulent, magnificent place on earth. It's in the southern part of Nepal, just over the border from India. And it was there that Ram first connected heart to heart with his eternal Padini Shakti, or his consort, Sita. We have a little Sita here today, named after the original Sita, Baladev and Joyce's daughter. Ram and Sita were married. It's one of the most beautiful stories ever told. Sita's father was Janak. He offered Ram the most wonderful foods, the most wonderful gifts. Everything was the best he could do, he gave to Ram, out of love. And when somebody is a king like that, and they're really trying to please you by giving you the best they can do, it's really nice. He gave unbelievable luxurious gifts to Ram. And Ram accepted it because they were given with pure love. Samsudhir Hari Toshanam. Hari means God. Samsudhir Hari Toshanam means the perfection of whatever we do is if we give pleasure to the Supreme. And in the Bhagavad Gita, in the next incarnation of Krishna, Krishna tells the example of how one could live in this world with devotion is Maharaj Janak. The Lord remembered him from his previous incarnation because he was such a great devotee in royalty. Later on, when Sita and Ram were banished to the forest and Sita was kidnapped and Ram was looking for Sita, they came to Pampa Sarovar, a lake close to Hampi or Kishkindha Kshetra. And living in a cave near that lake was a simple woman. She was illiterate. She had no caste, which had some relevance in India. She's lived in a cave. She just wore tree bark as clothes. Nobody in the world knew anything about her. But her guru, Matunga Rishi, before he left the world, he told her, "You should stay here because the Supreme Lord of the entire creation is going to incarnate as Ram and he's going to come here and you serve him with your heart and soul." She was simply awaiting. And she wasn't a pure person. But she wanted to become pure. And therefore her guru told him, just wait for Ram, and when he comes, he will bless you. So for many, many years, she just lived there, waiting for Ram. In a jungle, with no one around. And that lake, Bampa Sarovar, is filled with crocodiles, too. And there's snakes, and so many other things. But she was just, she didn't leave. She had faith in her guru. Years went by, she knew that Ram will come because my guru told me that. And just by lolyam, just that anticipation, just that transcendental yearning to be with the Lord, she was so immersed in remembering him, chanting his names, that she became completely purified. And then Ram came. He came all that way just for her. And she wanted to serve him the best she could do. But what did she have? Materially, she didn't have anything. There were no grocery stores in the jungles in those days. What can she give him to eat? There were just these wild little fruits. Little berries, actually. There's a berry called kapita. And you know who eats those berries? Monkeys. Monkeys like those berries. Usually humans will never eat them. Have any of you ever eaten them? See? Even our brahmacharis, these sadhus never ate them. So they must really be monkey food. That's the success of this whole class. So, the thing about these berries is sometimes they're sweet, and sometimes they're horribly bitter. Now, some fruits you can tell what they're going to be like by how the color, the softness, but this little fruit, there's no way to tell. And that was all that was around. So when Ram came with Lakshman, she just gave them a little straw mat, and then she went and collected these little berries. And she had a little bowl of them that she just collected with her own hands from these thorny trees all over the place. But she was afraid she might give Ram a bitter one. And because she was really unsophisticated, she would have never made it in Mumbai. What to speak of New York or London. She was totally simple. She just wanted to please Ram. Now, when you're offering something to God, you're not supposed to even smell it before he tastes it. But she wanted to make sure it was sweet, so she would take a berry and bite into it, like that. And if it was bitter, she would save it for herself later. And if it was sweet, she'd take it out of her mouth and say, "Here, Ram, eat this one." And Ram ate it. He ate all the fruits that he gave her. And he enjoyed it every single bit as much as he enjoyed the luxurious food and the jewels and the gold and the beautiful thrones that were given to him by Janak Maharaj. Being wealthy was not a disqualification. And being in total material poverty was not a disqualification. There's only one disqualification. No love, no intention to please someone through our devotion. And that bhakti is the only qualification that can please Krishna. Or really please the hearts of Krishna's children. when Krishna came as Krishna. There are so many stories. But let's go back to Ram. When they were building the bridge across the Indian Ocean, Raghunath loves to tell these stories, and he tells them with so much dramatic devotion. Hanuman, who is the very personification of bhakti, he was lifting mountains to put in the ocean and float. And as he was doing it, there was a little spider. Now, usually spiders are not so popular. There's temples of Hanuman all over India. And actually, there's temples of Hanuman all over the world. Have any of you ever seen a temple of a spider? Usually, if a spider comes in a temple, you sweep them away. So there was this little, here's Hanuman, the personification of bhakti, carrying massive boulders and mountain peaks to build the ocean. And a little spider with his thin leg is kicking one grain of sand at a time on top of the rocks that Hanuman's putting down. And he was standing in Hanuman's way. And Hanuman's a devotee, so he's seeing the presence of his beloved in everyone's heart, so he's not going to step on him. So he had to stop, and he's holding him mounted, and he's impatient for this spider to get out of the way. And Ram told Hanuman, that spider is doing exactly equal service as you are. Because you are doing the best you can, and this spider is doing the best that she can. So, Ram appreciated the spider as much as Hanuman. And Hanuman really appreciated that. Because there's nothing that brings more delight to a person with a pure heart than seeing other people get blessings. An ordinary, common, materialistic state of mind is if somebody is getting certain credit or praise or fame or rewards, we're thinking, why not me? What about me? You must be blind. You're not seeing. Either we get depressed or we become envious or competitive. But this is a barometer of our spiritual condition. A devotee has a simple relation. Whether you could lift a mountain, or you could pick a grain of sand, is not important. But that we sincerely do the best we can for the right purpose in devotion, to please the Lord. When Krishna went to Mithila, the same place where Ram married Sita, a descendant of Maharaj Janak. His name was Bahulaswa. Krishna came with a group of people, mostly sages and rishis like Narada. And Bahulaswa met Krishna at the very place where the town began, the kingdom. And he said, please come to my palace. And a very simple man, a Brahmin named Shrutadev, he
He also asked Krishna to come to his home.
Now, you and me, we would have to, like, get somebody to schedule which place we're going to come first and what time we're going to come. But Bhagavan has no problem. He just went to both places at the same time. But the amazing thing is neither one understood that he was anywhere else. Bahulasva offered Krishna the royal throne, had the best cooks make a magnificent feast. He offered him jewels and necklaces and crowns, and he had incredible entertainers singing and dancing for him, like the world's best stars. And Krishna, he appreciated so much because he offered it with love and devotion and simple sincerity. He was a king, but he had a simple heart. And Shrutadev, he offered a straw mat, not a throne. And then he offered some rice that he had just begged for. And that's all, rice. Chip flat rice. And as far as entertainment, Shrutadev and his wife, they just had, he took his little chowder like I have like this, and went like this and danced in front of Ram. And he wasn't a dancer. Ram was equally happy with both Bahulasva and Shrutadev. Why? Patram pushpam palam to yam yomi bhakta prayat. It was offered with sincere devotion. And the next incarnation was Sri Chaitanya. He was living in Navadvip for some time, and Puri some time. He went to Vrindavan. He traveled through southern and western India, just giving Krishna Prem, love for Krishna, through Krishna Nam, the chanting of Krishna's name. He was a king. His name was Vrindavanodara. He was the king of all of Orissa, which is the southeast state of India. He had magnificent palace, huge armies. No one could defeat him, even though so many in those days there were so many foreign invaders trying to conquer India. They could not conquer Prataparudra because he was such an intelligent person and he was such a compassionate person. Everyone in his kingdom loved him. Sri Chaitanya was traveling to Vrindavan. There were hundreds and thousands of people going with him. Can you imagine a pilgrimage like that? He wanted to just go alone. But he was so beautiful and so merciful. As he was walking, all of his associates came. A major part of the city of Puri followed him. And whenever village they were passing, he was chanting, and people just left their homes and left everything and just, we're going to Vrindavan with Sri Chaitanya. Prataparudra, as long as the Lord was within the precincts of Orissa, which is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles, and they were walking, he set up kitchens. He set up kitchens. So that the Lord and all those hundreds and thousands of people three times a day could have a royal feast. Because he knows if he just feeds Sri Chaitanya, he's not going to be happy if he doesn't feed everybody. Now, even if we wanted to do that, how many of us could do that? Have the wealth, the surplus of food, build the kitchens in the middle of nowhere, in fields and jungles and in towns and cities, and also accommodations for the night. There was also a simple beggar. His name was Suklambar Brahmachari. He lived on the bank of the river Ganga. Nobody knew who he was. He was very shy. He had a little one-room straw hut. It wasn't even his property. But in India, you know, you could just put a little straw hut up and nobody cares. So he was living on the bank of the Ganga, a little straw hut. Every day he would go out to beg for some rice. To get enough food for himself, he would usually have to beg in about 10 or 12 houses. And he didn't eat that much. Because mostly people just, you know, give a little, not even a handful of rice. And to beggars, you usually don't get the best rice you have. Usually after you sift your rice and there's rocks in a lot of it, then that you just give to the beggars. But the whole time, he was chanting God's names. And as he was chanting, he was feeling so much love, he would be crying. He was so satisfied. It didn't matter that nobody knew who he was or nobody cared who he was. He was so satisfied because he knew Krishna loved him. And he loved Krishna. And what was he going to do with that rice? He was going to offer it to Krishna. So his life was so meaningful and so fulfilling. One day, Sri Chaitanya, who's Bhagavan, he said to Suklambar, it was the morning they met. He said, today I am coming to your house for lunch. Because I'm longing to taste the sweetness of your rice. And you may not think you're qualified, but I want to eat your rice. And Suklambar was almost, he didn't know what to say. He said, no, you can't come to my house. You're Lakshminath, you're the husband of the goddess of fortune. This little straw hut, it's not, I don't even have a chair for you. I don't even have a mat for you. And besides that, I'm a beggar. What kind of houses I get this rice from? It's the cheapest rice. And besides that, I'm really a sinful person. I'm really fallen. I have no qualification to cook for you. You have so many great devotees and saints and sadhus and mahatmas and mahants that are cooking for you. Who am I? Lord Chaitanya smiled. He said, I'll be at your house at midday. And he walked away. Shall I continue? Suklambar, he was really mixed up. On one hand, he was really feeling the affection of the Lord, but on the other, I'm not even qualified to touch the food that's going to be eaten by such a great person. So he went to some other devotees with his dilemma and asked, what should I do? And they said, the Lord wants to eat your rice. You should make rice for him. And he said, but, you know, my rice is so contaminated. I got it by begging from so many people. So many people touched this rice and threw this rice in my dirty little bag. How could I do that? He said, well, if you're feeling self-conscious about it, just cook without touching it. So he's okay. So, you know, the Lord was coming, so he had to do something. He went to his little house, and he made a fire out of cow dung. He had to go out and collect some cow dung and mix some straw in it. And because cow dung's free, because cows very benevolently just leave it. They have no attachment to it. If only we could be so detached from such valuable goods. And made a little fire. And what did he do? He got some water from the Ganga and he started boiling the water. And he wanted to put something in the rice. Because this is the only time in his life the Supreme Lord Narayan's coming to his house. But what? He didn't have any vegetables. He got a stem from a banana. How many of you have eaten banana stems? It's not the banana. It's not the banana peel. It's the stem that connects the banana to the banana peel. And he cut up that banana stem and put it in the water. Then after carefully washing all this different shape pieces, they're not like full rice, it's just little pieces of rice, because people give you little pieces of rice. And he put that in the water. And after the rice and the stem started cooking, and actually he was so artistic in his simple way, he did it all without touching anything. He just like was he was so happy that the rice and the banana stem were cooking that he began to dance and crying, Jai Govinda, Jai Gopal, Jai Madhusudan, Jai Mukunda. And as he was crying and dancing, just putting his love into that, all of his love that he was expressing went into every particle of that rice. And just when he finished, Sri Chaitanya arrived at his door. And Sri Chaitanya said, "Please give me rice." He didn't have any nice plates. He didn't have any plates. He just made a little plate out of a banana leaf. And Sri Chaitanya sat down on the floor, just a mud floor, and ate the rice. And as he was eating the rice, he was weeping in ecstasy. He said, "Suklambar, I have tasted so many different preparations in Vaikuntha Lakshmi's cooking for me. In Goloka, Gopas and Gopis are cooking for me. In the heavenly planets, Indra and Vayu and Varuna and Surya are cooking for me. In this world, so many people are cooking for me. Kings and princes and Brahmins. But I have never tasted anything so delicious, so nutritious, so irresistible to me as this banana stem rice that you have prepared for me." And he meant it from the core of his heart. He was weeping. And when the people saw this and heard this, they were overwhelmed. What is real wealth? Not being a billionaire or a millionaire, but having love, having compassion, awakening that, it's called prema dan. Dan means treasure. The treasure of prema is within all of us. You have read books, perhaps, or seen movies about people who are seeking a hidden treasure. Sometimes they go in boats looking for a secret treasure. Sometimes they're digging all over the place. In America, there was this gold rush, and they were going and they were digging and trying to find gold because they wanted wealth. And in India, Some of the most precious diamonds that ever were in this earth are from the Krishna River and other places of India. But more precious than all those diamonds and all that gold is the wealth of prema. Nitya siddha Krishna prema sadhya kabu noi saravanadi sudhityati kodiye udai. That's within your heart. Within every heart. If you can't find it in your own heart, you can't find it anywhere else. And satsang, coming together with spiritually minded people, enlightened people, or those seeking enlightenment, is the means by which we could navigate how to find it within our heart. Satsang is where we get the map. Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. The scriptures, the saints, and the gurus, they give us the map of where to search for it. And also the tools. Sadhana, our spiritual practice, is the way we excavate our hearts to actually discover that treasure. But the beautiful thing is, it's 100% within every heart. Because that's who we are. That's our substance, Satchidananda. Suklambar Brahmachari attained the ultimate perfection of liberation, prema, simply by offering that banana stem rice. Shabari attained the highest perfection simply by taking those sweet little berries out of her mouth and putting it in Ram's mouth. Janak, Bahulasva, they attained the supreme perfection by giving all the royal offerings to the Lord. And I'd like to end with one story that just happened, 1972. Considering we've been speaking about previous incarnations, this is very contemporary. My beloved guru, who is the inspiration behind Govardhan Eco Village, Radha Gopinath Temple, and so many wonderful projects throughout the world, and so many millions of people's lives. In 1965, he left Vrindavan where he was living. And he was also, he was a Swami. He didn't have any money. He didn't have any contacts. He left for the West like a beggar to give this message of Krishna Prema, of Bhagavad Gita's essence. And later, he had so many thousands of people offering their lives to help him. People from Europe, from America, from India, from Africa. And so many temples. And on special occasions, he would tell the story of an old Bengali woman. She, when he was living in Vrindavan at Radha Damodar Temple, she would come early in the morning with a little bucket of water from the river she would collect and offer it to Krishna every day with so much sincere devotion. Srila Prabhupada was a great scholar, but how he was appreciating this. That was in the early 60s. One of his foremost beloved disciples went to live in Vrindavan in 1972. In fact, when she first came there, I was living in Vrindavan at that time. And her husband, I would go there sometimes just to meet them because they were so sincere. And besides myself and Asim Krishna, they were the only foreign people in all of Vrindavan. Yamuna Devi, I'd like to just give you some background of her. But first, when she was living there, Prabhupada wasn't there at the time. It was just her and her husband. And it was the summer in Vrindavan. And it was the hottest summer in decades. It was like about 115 degrees all day and practically all night. It was really hot. And she was from Oregon, so she's not accustomed to that. So it was difficult. She was living in the same little building of Radha Damodar, which is, she was sleeping in a little cellar on the roof that had no windows. And every day she would see that lady that she heard Prabhupada talk about. And she describes in her diary, and it's in her book, A Life of Devotion. She talks about this lady. Her name was Sarojini. She was a Bengali widow. She was very old. And her back was really bent because of old age and a very, very hard life. It was so much bent that her back was like at the most a 45-degree angle from her legs. And she had to lift her head really, really high just to see anything in front of her because she was so hunched over. She was emaciated thin, really skinny. Her clothes, she had one cloth that she would wear. It was probably about 10 years before it was white. But now it was just very, very dull, tattered, and gray. She was illiterate. She never went to school. You know, somehow, she's an old widow. And where did she live? Yamuna Devi found that she just lived in a little tiny, it wasn't even a house. It was just in the temple, just outside the temple courtyard. There was just a little overhang she would sleep. But every day she would bring that water. Now here's Yamuna Devi. Yamuna Devi honored this lady. She wanted to learn from this lady. Because a true devotee is saragrahi. That means they're seeking the essence. And Yamuna Devi was a seeker of essence. She was born and raised in a very wealthy family in Salem, Oregon. She went to a very high college. She was so talented. In 1966, she decided to come to New York City because she was invited to her sister's marriage. Her sister's name was Janaki. And at that time, all the Hare Krishna movement was a little storefront on 26th Second Avenue. And nobody knew anything about anything. And Mukunda, who's now Mukunda Maharaj, was going to be marrying Janaki. So Prabhupada was cooking the feast by himself. He was really a good cook. And Jamuna came all the way from Oregon, and she said, "Is there anything I can do to help?" And he said, "Do you know how to cook?" And she said, but she only knew very Western ideas of cooking. So she came in. Hari Bol, Doris.
I've been here before.
Thank you. She learned some cooking from Prabhupada. He taught her. She was actually a master cook. But he taught her, you know, things that she never knew. Because she couldn't utilize what she knew because she wasn't vegetarian at the time. And then she went back to Oregon and helped start the first temple in Haight-Ashbury, the second temple on Frederick Street. And about a year later, her and five others, plus a baby, went to London. And they went there, they didn't have any money, they didn't know anyone. And within a couple months, they were regularly going to George Harrison's house for kirtans. And all the Beatles were coming. And all these other rock and roll stars from England in those days were coming. When George heard her sing, George said, "Your voice mesmerizes me. It has so much devotion. I want to make a record of you singing." So Apple record label. Have you heard of that? In the Apple studios, George arranged. He had Paul McCartney doing the switchboard. What is it? The sound system. Yeah, the engineering. And George was playing guitar. And other people were all over the place. And Jamuna was singing. And her friends were playing different instruments and singing. And their first record was the Hare Krishna mantra. She was just singing the simple melody that Prabhupada originally sang. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And George made it into a 45 RPM. I don't know if you know what that means. But it's a record. It became the number one best-selling record on the top 40 in all of Europe. England, France, Italy, Eastern Europe. In fact, it was infiltrating behind the Iron Curtain in Russia. People were listening to it, fascinated. What is this? That was the nature of her voice, her so much devotion. And then George wanted to make a record album. It was called the Radha Krishna album, Radha Krishna Temple. And it became a huge best-selling record album. By the way, the flip side of Hare Krishna mantra was Govinda Jaya Jaya Gopala Jaya Jaya, again sung by Yamuna Devi. And George said to her, "I could make you one of the top stars in the music industry. with your voice, with your sincerity, with your devotion. And she said, I don't want that. I just want to be with my guru. And she went to India. She lived in Mumbai for some time, right close to here. And later in Vrindavan. Prabhupada wanted her to cook for him. So she studied. So meticulously she studied cooking. She traveled all over India. And then she wrote a cookbook. And when she published that cookbook, it was the number one international award for the best cookbook of the year. And I think it's the only time that a vegetarian cookbook has ever been the international best cookbook of the year. And you know what the name of the cookbook is? Lord Krishna's Cuisine. And she was on television shows and everything because she had this incredible award-winning cookbook. Anything she did was with... She was a calligrapher. She would write. It was like a masterpiece of art, anything she would write. She had deities and she worshipped the deities. I write about this in The Journey Home. I'm in The Journey Within. I've been to her house. Every detail is so lovingly offered. I've seen Hell's Angels. I've seen nuns. I've seen rock stars. I've seen simple mothers. I've seen PhD professors. Whoever sees what she does in her little altar, their hearts totally melt. Even if they don't understand what's going on in that altar, their hearts totally melt because they could feel the love and devotion and sincerity she has. That's the way she did everything. She was so cultured, so refined, so artistic, so talented. But when she was in Vrindavan, she would assist Sarojini. This hunched over little Bengali widow who didn't know much of anything. But she would help her make cow dung patties. And she would learn from her. She would learn from Sarojini how to make little stoves made out of clay. Yamuna saw that this, I might be an artist, but this Bengali widow, this Sarojini, she's truly an artist. Just her carrying water is with so much love and so much devotion. She was inspired because she understood what bhakti is. Bhakti is based on the sincerity of our intent. Certainly, Yamuna Devi was a true enlightened saint in every way. But the nature of a truly enlightened saint is how they can really appreciate the sincerity in others. Why? Because that's the way God sees. I'm sorry, I got so carried away in these stories, I forgot it was Pushy Abhishek. Really, I actually forgot about it, I'm sorry. But that's what this festival is about. So many hundreds of people came this morning, and for several days. Yesterday I came and I saw dozens and dozens of ladies and sadhus and corporate people. They were all doing their different parts in making all of these beautiful decorations that you see all around the temple room. It's not that we hired somebody to do that. It was just the congregation came together, working together. It was incredible. I saw brahmacharis like Purushottam organizing and so many, and I saw, you know, this, so many ladies just enthusiastic when sadhus and ladies and business people, everyone worked together without ego, without condescension, just everybody's doing their part. The result, something beautiful. Not only to see, but to feel. What you see may be nice to your eyes, but the vibration of the love and the devotion and the cooperation and the unity of so many different people on so many levels. That's what you feel with your heart. And today so many hundreds of people were plucking flowers. Some had white flowers. I got a little report that today you plucked 2,204.657 pounds of flowers. Approximately. But it was over 2,200 pounds. Over 1,000 kilos. And you pluck somewhere. There were 13 different types of flowers. Different colors, different fragrance, different shapes. And they were all together. And every pluck, Every petal, it was an offering of devotion, because nobody got paid. I hope nobody paid any of you. You know, some of you, you know, during that time, you know, in the Bombay Stock Exchange or in your corporate world, could have made maybe, you know, lakhs, hundreds and thousands of rupees in that time. But you were just here plucking flowers. People of all different varieties of nationalities and religions and castes and social, economic, educational stratums of society. None of that mattered. All that mattered is this is an offering to God. And the offering is not just what you do or what I do. It's what we do. That's bhakti. That's what will change the world. When we're not thinking in terms of you and me and I and mine. We're thinking of us. We're encouraging each other. When I was giving the class this morning, I was watching. It was really sweet. Just saying, throwing, and somebody is putting, tossing. And it wasn't like, I did 27 petals in the last 3 seconds and you only did 21. It wasn't a matter of quantity. It wasn't a matter of efficiency. It was a matter of sincerity. Because when it comes to flower petals, that's all that really matters. Why does it matter? Because that's all Krishna ever sees in any aspect of our life. Krishna is not concerned with the quantity of our wealth. He's not concerned with how many followers we have. He's not concerned with how much education or how much knowledge we have. He's concerned with the sincerity of our will to serve with devotion. And when we use when our knowledge and our wealth and our influence
is utilized with that humble, sincere, simple spirit of devotion to serve, then it makes everything beautiful. So as you can see, this temple, you know, people, wonderful, wonderful people contributed for this carved wood and this marble and the altar and the flowers and everything else. The stone carving outside. But what do we do inside? Anyone today who plucked a single petal with sincere devotion has done as much as everybody else to appreciate that in each other. It is where we will find that treasure within our hearts. So we'll be chanting, and Radharani and Krishna will be showered with the flowers of all of our devotion. And just to see with our eyes is, if we're just seeing that spirit, this is our offering of love, and it's being expressed through these flowers. That state of heart can purify us and purify the world. And after all these 2,205 pounds of flowers are offered to Krishna, then from all of these windows on top, they will shower upon us. And then we can, Krishna's grace, Krishna's prasad, we can joyfully, jubilantly, lovingly share with each other. I'm very grateful to everyone. Thank you very much.